Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Save big money on everything for your projects now at Menards. Plastic lattice panels are durable, low maintenance, and are easy to install. They're a great accent for deck skirting, garden trellises, and creating privacy walls. We stock a huge variety of colors and sizes to fit your project. Save big on lattice at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1003. It's the 26th of February, 2018. On the podcast today, Gerard Kisby-Green, CEO of Goldplat PLC, that's GDP ticker, discusses the highlights from the interim results. Also on the podcast, James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds, BOD, talks about the scoping study that has commenced to determine the potential commerciality of the Thorny River Diamond Project and also discusses their other interests. Also on the podcast, Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources, ERIS, gives an update on the start of their drilling at the Abbeytown Zinc Project in Ireland and their application for 18 new contiguous prospecting licenses in an area east of Galway. Plus, as the Monday, I have market analyst for Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about the following companies who are reporting this week: Greggs, ITV, and Taylor Wimpey. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gerard Kisby-Green, CEO of Goldplat PLC, that's GDP ticket. Gerard, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Justin.
And I think
thanks
we're
for having
like,
the show.
Yeah, it's good. We haven't spoken for 2 years, and I assume a lot has happened in that time. For people not aware of the company, Goldplat, Gerard, summarize, what are you all about, please?
Justin, yes, thank you. I mean, we really are a junior gold producer, producing the order of about 40,000 ounces of gold per year. Where we differentiate ourselves and we really are a niche player is that we produce most of our gold and indeed our financial numbers from what we call recovery operations. Mm-hmm. That is not recovery as in retreatment of tailings, but rather we recover gold, silver, and other precious metals from byproducts of primary mining operations, those being, you know, fine carbon, mill liners, wood chips, grease, anything like that. We have a recovery operation in South Africa. We have another one in Ghana. And then we also have a resource of about 670,000 ounces and a small primary gold mine in Kenya. And we are looking to grow our mining business from, you know, around about 6,000 ounces a year up to about 50,000 ounces over the next couple of years, and grow the recovery business from 40,000 up to about 50,000 ounces over the same period. And yeah, that's really what we do in a nutshell.
Excellent stuff. And you've announced your interim results for the 6 months ending the 31st of December. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Gerard.
Sure. Look, I think the highlights are that on the production level, you know, we did pretty well, both relative to the previous interim period, as well as if you analyze the numbers over the year. So I'm very happy with all the production numbers. You know, what one that stands out is the Ghanaian production, which is down on the similar period, but that is by design. It is in line with plan. We've been processing lower grade, higher quality, better margin stuff. So the financial numbers will reflect that. Revenues were up significantly by about 25% to £18 million for the period. Operating profit was up 56% to just under £1.6 million for the period. We have spent just over £1 million on capital expenditure, and that is primarily in Ghana, where we are installing an elution plant. And we have just around about £1 million of cash, which is down, but we did during the period acquire a strategic stockpile of material in South Africa for around about £800,000, and we repaid about £500,000 of debt. So, you know, on all the production numbers, most of the production numbers and financial numbers, I'm very pleased with the period.
Yeah, and what about looking forward? I mean, you've got a post-period sort of update here, and you've got an outlook. Is that positive, Gerard?
Yeah, the outlook, I mean, we're online for market expectations on all counts. You know, our forays into South America are starting to yield fruits in our Ghanaian operations, so we're very positive about that. The capital projects which we've been completing over the last couple of years since we last spoke are just about all done. You know, the final one, which is the elution plant in Ghana, we started commissioning the elution plant itself, the columns in December, and they are now performing up to what we expect. And we just finalizing installation of the ancillary equipment and expect our first gold pour ever in Ghana in the middle of March this year. So yeah, I mean, all the forecasts are good, notwithstanding things out of our control like gold price and exchange rates, but where we've got control, you know, I'm very happy and we're very positive for the period.
Yeah, but gold is looking quite bullish at the moment, isn't it?
It is, you know, on a dollar basis, it certainly is. You know, obviously, we also have the effect of the domestic currencies.
Yeah.
But all in all, you know, at $1,340 or anything above $1,300 an ounce, you know, we should not be complaining.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, Gerard, it's good to chat to you and sounding positive there. So if people are listening to this and, you know, they're not yet following you, they're following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
I think number one is we are on almost all counts, we're undervalued. Secondly, we're a producing company and we are cash flow positive. And thirdly, we've got a very well articulated growth strategy with a track record over the last couple of years of delivering into that.
Excellent stuff. Gerard, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox
Cheers.
Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds. The ticker there is BOD. James, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much indeed for having us.
It's always nice to get a new company on because, you know, I'm a private investor myself and I like to be educated. And I know about Botswana. I do hold a sort of company that invests in Botswana there, so I know pretty much about Botswana. I'm not huge on the diamond market, though. So before we get into the details of what your particular project is about, the specifics there, give us a brief summary as to what Botswana Diamonds all about, please, James.
Botswana Diamonds is a diamond explorer very firmly focused in Botswana, as the name sounds, and South Africa too as well. Why Botswana? Botswana is a stable democracy in the southern end of Africa, and it's the world's largest supplier of diamonds. Why South Africa? South Africa is home to strong diamond production, and according to De Beers and according to ourselves, is probably one of the most prospective countries in the world. Yeah. And in each of those countries, we have active exploration adventures from greenfields exploration all the way through to resource development.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so looking through your recent news feed here, and you've got a Thorny River project update. Now, is this your flagship project, James?
Yes, this is our flagship project, and why we call it that is that it's a project which is most advanced in terms of resource development mm-hmm. and most advanced in terms of potential commerciality. And our RNS we issued a week or so ago said that we had just kicked off a scoping study to look at the various engineering and costing components of developing a mine there.
Okay, and so you've kicked that off. And what do you know about the project so far then up until this level?
Well, over the course of the last year, we did a lot of exploration work, including percussion and core drilling, microdiamond assessment, and finally at the end of the year, we took a large bulk sample and recovered a large number of bulk diamonds. So what we have at the moment is we have a classified exploration information, which has given us grade and diamond value and volume ranges.
Okay, and what are those?
They sit at the moment between $60 and $140 per ton in the ground. And if one compares that with many other diamond projects in the world at the moment, that looks fairly attractive. And therein why the board has actually kicked off the scoping study to start looking at the engineering and commercial aspects of the project.
Marvellous stuff. And how long, you know, will this scoping study last, James? And when will you start getting results from them?
We will complete the scoping study within a period of 6 months. It is an area of the country where there is already strong infrastructure. We're not in the middle of the desert like in Botswana. We're 3 hours north of Johannesburg. We're just off the main highway. We have power, we have water, and we have a stable workforce. So it's not something where a lot of remote applications you're going to have to look at.
Yeah, and I suppose, importantly, you have the cash to carry out this scoping study, don't you?
That's correct. We also raised, and that was our second RNS of a week or so ago, we raised £500,000 in order to complete the scoping study and also, very importantly, to further our other exploration activities in Botswana and in South Africa and take the other kimberlites we have in our portfolio gradually up the resource pipeline.
Yeah, and just an overall view of the diamond market. Where's it at, Jim? What's it like at the moment?
The diamond market over the past 5 years has actually been steadily improving. It's not been volatile. It's not given some very highs or some very lows. But one of the big key indicators of the diamond market are the diamond sales between Thanksgiving and Christmas in the United States, as that is where approximately 25% of the world's diamonds are sold on an annualized basis. And the news coming out of the States was that diamond sales were ahead of expectation. And that's good for the market, as what it means is that the diamond pipeline starts to get destocked and it goes all the way back to explorers who have the longest lead time from a diamond pipeline expression.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting. Wow, I didn't know that. That's an interesting fact. So, okay, well, James, if someone's listening right now and they like the sound of this, but they're not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, the first reason, Botswana and South Africa are the most prospective destinations for diamonds in the world. The second reason is Botswana Diamonds has a package of high-quality projects and ground all the way from exploration ground to kimberlites, which are on the verge of resource development. And thirdly, Botswana Diamonds has the team which developed the world-class AK6 kimberlite, firstly with De Beers and then with Lucara Diamond Corporation. And this mine is host to some of the world's largest and most fabulous diamonds and, importantly, produced a dividend in its second year of operation.
Excellent stuff. And before you go, so what's the next bit of, what's the next milestone you're hoping to achieve, James?
Well, there are three bits of news we're going to be putting out over the next 3 to 4 months. The first one are the drilling results on a project at Ontevreden. The second one are mineral chemistry results on our suite of kimberlites in the Free State province of South Africa. And then thirdly, what we've discussed already are the results of our scoping study on the Thorny River project in South Africa.
Excellent stuff. Well, obviously there's a lot going on there. And James, it's good to get you on very soon. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I hope so too. Thank you very much to you too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources. That's E-R-I-S ticker. Merlin, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
From a snowy, wait, is it Buckinghamshire? Where are you? It's snowy there. Yeah. Snowing, is it?
Yeah, it's quite cold and it's snowing.
Wow. Yeah, it's been entitled The Beast from the East. And I saw the weather forecast this week. Apparently, Wednesday, it's not going to get above 2 degrees all day. That's a bit chilly, isn't it?
It's almost as cold as where we're operating in Sweden, but certainly a lot colder than on the west coast of Ireland.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it doesn't stop your operations there, because in cold countries, they still get on with it, they seem they can deal with it. In our country, we seem to be grinding to a halt. But you've had some news out, some exciting news there. Let's get into that. But before we do, for people listening, Merlin, and not aware of Eris Resources, summarise, what is the business all about, please?
Sure. Eris Resources is an exploration company focused on making discoveries and driving shareholder value through those discoveries. We work with industry and we've got good partners already. We've got a joint venture with Centerra Gold, a mid-tier company, and backing from Osisko Gold, another mid-tier Canadian company. We've got a portfolio of zinc asset in Ireland that we own 100% and are funding and developing. And we have a portfolio of gold assets in Sweden that are being funded by Centerra Gold. And there's a whole series of projects there that they are working on, that we are working on for them.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so the title of the RNS is Start of Drilling at Abbey Town and New Galway Project in Ireland. So take us through the detail, if you could, Millen.
Sure. When we came to AIM, we said that we were going to drill out the Abbey Town project, and I'm very pleased to say that the drill is there. The rig is turning. The project near Sligo, and we've got four key prospects across 16 kilometres of strike, and within each of those prospects, there are a number of high priority targets that we will be drilling over the next 5-6 months. We've got a 5,000 metre drill program as a kind of a phase one, and we've started that program as it happens at the most western end at the prospect called Screen. And it's a very large zinc anomaly. We've got 3 kilometers by 2 kilometers zinc anomaly in soil. There are lots of signs of a major hydrothermal system there. So we're very pleased to get started drilling.
Yeah. And of course, for people not aware of zinc, it's having a bit of a run of late, isn't it?
Very much so. Yes, the zinc price has doubled in the last 2 years. And there's a real shortage of quality zinc projects that can be brought into production, commercial production, without huge capex, or extremely difficult infrastructure. So the assets that we're looking at in Ireland, because they're shallow, because they're high grade, because there's good infrastructure, any discovery we make would have a premium commercial value.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And so, 18 new license applications made over the new Galway project area.
Yes, and that's the other thing that Eris Resources does. We have got the internal capacity to bring new projects together to identify new potential. These 18 licenses, it's a major land package. It's 673 square kilometres, and it's on the southwestern extension of the main Irish Midlands zinc trend. And this really was one of the last unexplored areas of Ireland, and if you go to the Irish geological map, there's no information there. It's just kind of question marks over what happens, because it's flat and it's soil covered, and there's been very little data and information to date. Now, two things have changed recently. One, that was the new Galway bypass motorway came through, so we saw some geology in the road cuttings, and in addition, critically, the government-funded TELUS survey released new data for this swathe of Central Ireland. And as soon as that data was released, we took the area that we were interested in, we reprocessed it, and it's quite extraordinary. It shows complex basin margins very similar to the settings where other Irish deposits are found. So what were the road cuttings, so we could see the geology, and the geophysics showing structure and type setting, we applied for the ground, we put in the reservation, and then applied for the permits once we'd done the mineral processing. And we've got this large contiguous block over highly prospective ground. And it just in Ireland at the moment, there's so much activity, it's almost impossible to get a big slug of ground like this. So we're delighted with this.
Yeah, okay. And what's next in this area? What do you do next?
Well, the TELUS survey, the government-funded survey, has released so far the geophysical data. So the geophysics we've got. The geochemistry is due out in Q1 this year, and we're expecting it. Well, there's only 1 month left. It's March. So we're expecting it in the next few weeks. And once we've got the geochemistry, we'll be able to see if there are any hot spots over the area that we've got. We already suspect where we think the geochemistry is likely to show. We've got the junctions on the structure, and we've got some hot spots that we'll be looking to test. But once we get the government data, hopefully that will give us a vector And then we'll be able to get on the ground, take some more detailed soil geochemical grids, and within a few months, say later this year, we'll have combined geophysics, geochemistry, and geology, which will enable us to come together with a drill plan.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I mean, you've got a lot going on for a some sort of 10 million market cap company. So what's the next sort of milestone that people can listen out for, Marlon?
Well, we're drilling in Ireland. We're on the cusp of drilling in Sweden. So really, we've got three other drill programs in Sweden. So there's going to be a lot of news flow throughout 2018. It'll be results from either Ireland or Sweden, progress updates on drilling. We're turning over a pipeline of portfolios in Sweden. So it's work on new projects, drilling on existing projects. And I can't really say when we're going to release, but we've got a very busy year ahead.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, listen, if someone is listening to this, and you sort of covered it there, but as a summary, you know, if they're not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please. Marlon?
Well, the first reason is it's a quality company. We've got a very experienced team, we've got strength in depth, and we've got a quality portfolio of good assets, and we're in the right jurisdictions of Ireland and Sweden. The second is that in terms of value, mm-hmm. we've got, if you look at our peers, both either in Sweden or in Ireland, we're trading at a discount to our peers in Ireland and a discount to our peers in Sweden, but effectively you've got two companies for the price of one. And then the third reason is absolutely news flow. We've got drills turning in both countries. We've got over 10,000 metres of funded drilling for 2018. We've got lots of news flow coming.
Merlin, thanks very much for that. You seem like you've got a lot going on, like you say there. So plenty of news flow, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell. You all right, fella?
Very good, thank you.
Now, to explain, Connor comes on and he chats about companies releasing news this week, normally bigger market cap companies like FTSE 100 companies, FTSE 250. So, first and foremost, who's up this week, Connor? Who's reporting?
First up, we've got Greggs. They're reporting their full-year figures on Tuesday. They had an absolutely fantastic 2017. You know, the sort of chart investors could only dream of, really. I think it was up 47% by the end of the year, which is obviously a very, very big move upwards. January update sort of gave an indication of why that might be. Full year total sales were up 7.4%. Company managed shop like-for-like sales were up 3.7%. It added a net addition of 90 new openings in 2017. I think it was that took its estate to 1,854 stores, which is a lot of Greggs stores. I think it said it was going to ramp up its expansion in 2018 as well. I think it was targeting like 110 to 130 new locations. Said it had started selling vegan products. I think it was looking to increase its hot food options, increase the number of drive-through stores, which have been a big success. So really, really positive update. However, it did say that industry-wide cost pressures would continue in the year ahead, which is difficult for Greggs, because I guess Greggs's core base of customer is likely going to Greggs due to the cheapness of its products. You know, it's cheaper than a lot of other high street places. There was sort of uproar last year when it raised the price of one of it, I think of its sausage rolls by like 20p or something.
So talking about sausage rolls and pasties. I can't give you a straight face. Sausage rolls and pasties, brilliant. Go on, I don't know what sausage roll costs in Greggs, but let's
have a look. I think it might have been 80p to a pound, or like 70p to 90p, or something like that.
Okay.
I think it'll be reluctant to pass on those cost pressures really to customers in fear of sort of eating into its like-for-like sales. Like those like-for-like sales are the 3.7%, very healthy, but that was down on the 4.2% it had seen the year previous. Mm-hmm. So there are a few, you know, a couple of things for investors sort of to pick at and be like, not sure about this and that. But overall, you know, it's doing very positive and has successfully sort of pivoted its business to to be like an option that, you know, it's clearly got McDonald's in mind in terms of what it would like to be, sort of ubiquitous on the high street, a place where people feel comfortable eating breakfast, lunch and dinner, you know, the drive-throughs, and it's sort of introduced delivery to offices and things like that. It's clearly got big ideas. Mm. I think in terms of its four-year figures on Tuesday, the reaction is going to be dictated by, you know, how much of those sort of cost pressures across 2017 affected its bottom line. Because obviously its sales figures have held up well, so I think it's going to be down to those profit figures on Tuesday. In terms of our clients, though, they're buying fairly heavily around the £13 mark. I think they're happy with what Greggs is doing. Obviously, it's got a big job on its hands, matching the growth it saw in 2017. But at the moment, all signs are quite positive around Greggs.
Yeah. Well, listen, whatever happens, I know there'll be a queue of people queuing up for their sausage roll and pasties, whatever happens. Do you know what? I just Googled Greggs, and at the top of the Google search came menu. Click on that. It says unavailable. I thought, really? But so they need to sort that out, because on the Google search, but I went into menu there, and I'm looking at sausage rolls, and you go in there, and it's quite a professional little sort of setup there. They've got a little bit of text about it, and a picture on the left, and on the right, the nutritional information. And I've got to say, you know the traffic light code system for fat yeah. saturates? Of the four boxes there, three of them are red. and sugars, I didn't realize this, is less than 1%. But fat, 31%. Saturates, 65%. 65% yeah. saturates. And salt, 27%, all above into the red territory. But you know what? Yeah. Some would argue that's why they taste so good. Because they're all in the red. It's like danger. Yeah, okay. Lovely. Greggs on the chart. It's had a nice little rise since 2014. Went from £5, doubled in price, and then come back to £13, come back to £10 in 2016, gone back up to £14 there. Now, so, like I said, £13 there. So, you know what? You know, we are in a society where we are ever growing ever more health conscious and realizing what we're putting in our gobs, but there'll always be that, you know, base population there. I think mentally base. I mean, there'll always be that, you know, certain amount of people who want, you know, a pasty or sausage roll, of not every day, but it's always there, isn't it? You know,
Greggs has also done well to, it's introduced a lot more, you know, healthy options and healthy ranges in its stores as well. So it's done well to sort of cater for that slightly yes. more health conscious market as well. I'm not quite sure whether that would be the first port of call for people that are looking for a healthy lunch, but
exactly.
Do you know what?
Spot on, Connor. I never heard anyone say, do you know what, I fancy something healthy, I need something healthy, let's go to Greggs. I've never said any of that, you know, that doesn't happen, does it, ever.
Yeah.
And in fact, I mean, probably you're spoiled in London, but where I am, I mean, I don't know if there's any many sort of shops or takeaways that, you know, sort of major on healthy food. I know they add, you know, like McDonald's or this, they all do, they nod towards the healthy food by giving you an option there, but it's not what they're known for, and especially when you're eating it on the hoof, you don't particularly go for it. I mean, there's some decent salad bars, but in the winter, I don't like eating a salad, you know, I want something warm, you know, I suppose soup maybe. Okay, anyway, Greggs, what's next, Connor?
We've got ITV.
Cool.
Hasn't been doing too well recently. I think it was down 20% in 2017. Sort of fears about advertising revenue and a slowdown in advertising revenue sort of been the main cause of that drop. Its last update was in November. It sort of covered the 9 months to the end of September. I think total external revenue had slipped by 1% to 2.1 billion, which isn't bad given that net advertising revenue had fallen 7% across those 9 months. It was down only 4% in the third quarter specifically, which is obviously a clear improvement, but still a 7% drop in net advertising revenue is pretty chunky. Mm. I think the main boost for ITV, as it has been for a while really, is ITV Studios. I think that division saw a 9% rise in revenue to just over 1 billion. That obviously eased the impact of the advertising slowdown. I think ITV.
So what is that? This is where they rent out the studios, or what? What?
No, it's like the content production, you know, producing shows in house and then selling those on, I guess, internationally.
I see.
As well as it being shown in the UK. I think that's been sort of the key. So they're shifting towards that again to ease any advertising slowdown and make sure that the company is sort of diversified enough that it can withstand a drop in consumer, a drop in business confidence, and things like that that might affect advertising revenue. I think it's done well. I think they'll look to continue to pivot towards that as the years go on. And obviously, it's doing very well at the moment. If you just, you know, things like Downton Abbey and stuff like that. In terms of its full-year figures, it is expecting, I think, net advertising revenue to actually rise 1% in the fourth quarter. So I said that for the year, I think advertising revenue will be down 5%, which ITV claims is still outperforming the total TV ad market, which I guess is good, but I don't think means a lot to investors because it is still, you know, they're still just going to see that headline figure. And I guess because there's not a lot of other TV companies to compare with, you know, big FTSE 100 TV companies to compare with, even if it is outperforming the TV ad market, it's still down 5%. It also could be interesting on Wednesday, full year figures on Wednesday. It'll be the first, I think the first major update under Caroline McCall, who took over as CEO in January. So I think investors will be on the lookout for any shifts in strategy there, whether McCall will use, you know, it's a full year update. So there's, you know, it's a substantial one for McCall to potentially outline what her plans are for ITV. Already, I think news has come out that she's sort of, changed the negotiation strategy with Virgin Media because they're at the moment discussing how much Virgin will pay to carry ITV for the next few years on their cable services. Think they've changed the negotiations, but I think they'll carry ITV for free, but the overall deal will end up being higher than what was paid previously. So obviously, you know, McCall has shown that she's willing to, you know, shift things a bit. So it'll be interesting to see whether she gives any more substantial update on Wednesday. From our clients' perspective, they sort of they've started to come back into around the 170 mark, buying around the 170 mark. We've seen people sort of closing their sell orders and now starting to buy around that 170 level. So obviously they think that it's you know, potentially a new start under McCall. Investors might be willing to give the company a bit more benefit of the doubt because they're now operating under a new CEO. She's only been there for a few months, so they might be willing to take a more positive look on whether figures it reports on Wednesday.
Yeah. So she's from EasyJet, isn't she?
Yeah, right.
Do you know what? I do feel that it's been a long time coming, but I do feel now that we are tipping the balance. And TV, traditional TV, as we know it, you know, is sliding a slippery slope, isn't it? I mean, they have to create these other revenue streams because I think, you know, I'm just looking at my kids, you know, they never watch traditional TV at the time it's on. They're on their iPads and stuff like that, and it's not like you all settle down in front of the TV on Saturday night and watch something these days. You know, they could have four members of the family all doing different things, so there's definitely a smaller chunk of the pie, isn't there, you know?
Yeah, I think obviously ITV, that's why the ITV Studios is good, because they can sell content to places like Netflix and Amazon. And also I think their online viewership was up 41% over that 9-month period, which again is very strong. And obviously ITV has adverts on ITV Hub, so there is still a decent base there for them to keep up advertising revenue, even if, you know, traditional live viewing starts to dip. Also, you have to remember, even though that change is going to be coming, there are still a lot of older people in around the world that don't use things like Netflix. So whilst the change is coming, there is still a space for traditional media companies.
Definitely, yes. And there always will be, you know. It's just it doesn't have the dominance anymore, you know.
No, I guess it'll be... sort of like, I think we've spoken before about M&S and Next, about it just sort of acclimatizing to different expectations, and then once investors sort of settle with that, then potentially the stock can begin to recover and sort of you know, find its new regular trading band, I guess.
Cool. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally we've got Taylor Wimpey. They're also updating their full year figures on Wednesday. Again, had a very strong 2017. It was up 35%. It worked hard to get there. There were some periods where things looked pretty dicey for Taylor Wimpey, especially over the summer. But overall, it just kept climbing. I think it really benefited from the first few months of the year in 2017. It saw quite a sharp rise. However, 2018 hasn't been too kind of it so far. I think it initially spiked, like in the first few days of the year, it hit a 20-month high. But then it sort of updated in January, dragged it lower. And then obviously you've had fears of rising interest rates, not only affecting the, you know, the market as a whole, but specifically house builders. That dragged it to like a 7-month low at the start of February. It's bounced back a bit since then, but I think it's still like 20p off of the highest struck in early January. In terms of its January update, there wasn't necessarily a lot to justify... sort of the decline it sparked. I think completions for the full year are up 5% to 14,541. average selling price was up 4% to £264,000. It said that its operating profit margin had risen from 20.8% to 21.2%. It had something more than £500 million net cash after paying out a £450 million dividend over the year. Said it was going to pay out a dividend of £500 million over 2018. All very, very strong figures. However, it seems like investors chose to instead focus on the fact that its order book had slipped by, I think, around 3% to 1.63 billion year on year. Though Taylor Wimpey did say that was sort of about the way things fell over the year rather than any massive slowdown. And also, they sort of, I think the CEO had said that it expects to see further growth in the housing market in 2018, but at levels not as strong as seen in previous years. And investors, I think, hooked onto that comment and took that as signs of a slowdown and have sent it quite sharply lower. However, our clients clearly think it's been oversold, because both before that comment, and definitely since, they've been really aggressively buying the stock around 190. So I think they're looking for it to bounce following its full year figures on Wednesday.
I know it's just that macro worry, isn't it, about interest rates gradually creeping up from here. And like I say,
obviously that's the thing, like we're in such sort of choppy waters at the moment that, you know, Taylor Wimpey could release very decent figures on Wednesday, but if other macro things have happened around then to, you know, spark those interest rate fears again, then it could be lost in the wash. So that's I guess one of the dangers around the stock at the moment.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Philip. Well, good to chat to you, and we'll speak next week. Thanks, Connor.
Yeah, come next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Chariot Oil and Gas, that's CHRAR. At four, Ferrum Crescent, FCR. At three, Petromatad, MATD. At two, Armadale Capital. I did write a blog about this on the weekend. They're in the graphite space, which is a very exciting space, often overlooked, you know, when it comes to electric vehicles. But there's between 10 and 30 times more graphite in a lithium-ion battery than lithium. So it's going to be well demanded in the next few years. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals. That's H-E-M-O, resulting of a tweet that was put out saying laboratory breakthrough on the weekend, and the share price is up by about 100% today. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Connemara Mining, strategic financing and board restructuring. At four, Edenville Energy, Deputy Minister of Minerals site visit. At three, Altona Energy, appointment of consulting geologist. At two, Feedback PLC, half-year report. And number one most liked RNS came from Vast Resources, appointment of country manager in Zimbabwe. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler ColumbusAutoMall.com.
My fact this week is that Andy Warhol would regularly have his wig cut by a barber and then return the following month wearing a new, longer wig.
Hello, we are No Such Thing as a Fish. We are a British podcast all about facts and trivia and everything interesting in the whole wide world.
We cover everything from pufferfish rectums to the moon to mangrove forest. What else do we do, James?
Oh, well, what about the fact that in 1936, a robot in California shot its inventor in the head?
There you go. If you're intrigued to hear more, peppered with some bad puns and some crude jokes, then check us out. We are No Such Thing as a Fish.